Are you guys, anyone familiar with the phrase, jump the shark? Jump the shark. Does anybody know where that phrase originates from? That's right, Happy Days. So the beloved show Happy Days, late in its lifespan, the plot of the show, which had been traditionally, notoriously, like, relatable and, you know, laced with 50s nostalgia and adolescent, you know, relatability, late in the show's plot and in its life cycle, the plot took an odd twist, okay? There's an episode where Fonzie, the, like, super cool guy, was challenged to don skis and take, you know, like, he went around this boat and jumped this ramp over this place where a shark was being held captive in a little net thing. I watched the episode this week. It is hilarious and, like, painfully awkward, okay? Fonzie is wearing those, like, skin-tight, short, like, European trunks, you know? And, of course, his leather jacket, even though he's skiing, you know? The writers admitted later that they put the show together because Henry Winkler, the guy who plays Fonzie, is like a really good water skier, and they just wanted to highlight his skills. But it was a low point. it was that moment of the show that fans said, you know what? This has gone too far. Like, this show has veered too far away from what we really love about it. This show has jumped the shark. It's no longer relatable to us. And so that phrase now is, like, used for all kinds of shows that have pushed the limits of the plot so much that it's strained the audience's relatability to the show so much that it is on the verge of snapping. It's now a common phrase in our culture, especially as it relates to TV and movies, when things jump the shark. The audience says, all right, enough. I can't hang with this anymore. Like, it's gone too far. It's bizarre and unrelatable. I went down a little rabbit hole with Jump the Shark. I was reading about other shows. Can I just share a couple? You know, I was reminded this week of really late in the show, in the Flintstones show. Do you remember that they introduced a character really late called Gazoo, who's an alien from another planet? You remember that? That was the jump the shark moment for the Flintstones. After that, it was the nail in the coffin. It was over. Or, I didn't actually remember this one. Maybe some of you do. Did you know that they introduced a new family member into the Brady Bunch in the final season? Cousin Oliver? Yeah, because they were just trying to spice it up. You remember? Someone does. Trying to hold the audience's attention, and they did not succeed. They lost it. Okay. Our story this morning feels a little bit like a jump the shark moment, I think. As we've walked through these miraculous signs that Jesus has done in the book of John, we've seen him heal the sick, we've seen him feed hungry people, but now we see him walking across the surface of the water in a storm by himself. This sign, I think, is more intense than the others. It demonstrates a new level of power on Jesus' side, and it asks, I think, a new level of faith on our end. Even if you've been tracking so far with, like, okay, miraculous feedings, miraculous healings, I think this one is a challenge. Is this John's jump the shark moment, where we say, man, this is just too much? The story is too bizarre and crazy. We've shifted here from a good healer to a mythical deity who walks across water. It's one thing to believe that a sick person can get well. It's another thing to believe that that food can be multiplied. But it's another thing altogether to believe that the laws of physics can be suspended so that a person can walk across the sea. No tricks, no magic, no embellishment, no mythology. I think John knows the challenge of this text. He's not a screenwriter here trying to hold the attention of a slipping audience. He is telling us accounts of what he saw. And he's saying, look, we were terrified when we saw it. I'm not making this up, he's saying. It shook us, and when we got to the other side of the lake, everyone was like, what in the world happened? Jesus did not leave in that boat. We saw it with our own eyes. John knows the challenge of this text because it blew his mind too. And I think the extravagance of it is exactly the point. John is showing us here the sign that Jesus did. What it points to, that Jesus was in fact God. So that's what we're going to work on this morning. Just a reminder, just a recap of the story. The disciples were kind of waiting for Jesus. Jesus had retreated to a mountainside. They finally decide to leave Jesus, to get into the boat and to sail across a lake that's about 8 miles across. They hop in and take off, but the waters get rough, the storm rages, and then they see Jesus walking across the water to them, coming towards the boat. Our story this morning, we're going to cover in three headings. And sorry, I have no fancy titles, not even an alliteration for you this morning. It's going to be the storm, the power, and the boat. All right, the storm, the power, and the boat. So let's start with the storm. What this passage glosses over in a one-sentence description is lost on many of us, but it was not lost on the readers of John's gospel. It says that a strong wind blew up and the sea became rough. John didn't think that they needed any more of an explanation than that, because his readers were a part of that world and they knew exactly how significant what was happening that day on the water was. A storm had whipped up on the Sea of Galilee. Now, a couple things about these storms that happened on the sea. First, they were dangerous. They were dangerous. You know, we as human beings are not equipped for life on the water in the same way that we're equipped for life on the land, obviously. You know, when you're on the land, you can take shelter from severe weather or from, like, predators or something, but the sea is different. When you're on the water, you are exposed and at the mercy of powers that are far greater than you. I don't have a lot of experience with that, but I'm sure that some of you do. Some of you have spent time on the water, and you know just how true that is. How dangerous being in a storm in a boat, especially a small boat, can be. Even with, like, modern technologies, we still see tragedies happen in our world. You know, things like the story that happened in Branson this year, you know, where a fun tour turns into a horrific nightmare of a tragedy in just a few minutes. Well, how much worse was it for those disciples in the boat all those years ago without modern technology, with a primitive boat, with no life vests? If they go over the boat in a storm, it's over for them. These guys were in real danger. These storms were very dangerous, and they would escalate very quickly. I think that that's probably true of storms on water anywhere, but I know that that was especially true of the Sea of Galilee, that these storms could whip up very quickly. Things could go from fine and calm to dangerous very fast. Being on the water, in the dark, in a storm, was serious business for them. These disciples were in real danger. This wasn't an irrational fear of theirs. This was serious business. They were in danger. And the text says that they were rowing for their lives, hoping to survive, hoping to maybe reach the other side of the sea, or that the storm would relent and give them rest. These storms were serious business. They were dangerous. These storms, though, were also expected. They were expected for these disciples. They were notorious on the Sea of Galilee. These squalls would come up all the time. And so the disciples made a calculated risk when they got into the boat that day. They knew that there was a good chance that a storm could whip up. They knew the risk. And as frightened as they were, they probably weren't surprised by the storm. This was very common on the Sea of Galilee. Well, the implication of storms is obvious for us too. We face storms in our lives. Storms that are truly dangerous for us. So powerful that they threaten us to the very core. We face situations in our lives in which we're subject, just like the disciples, to far greater powers than we possess in ourselves. Things so big that they parallel, in a strange way, the disciples' experience. Situations in which we feel like we might actually perish. Many of us have faced storms like that. Perish, maybe physically, but also probably more commonly, spiritually, emotionally. We might perish. We might suffer so greatly that recovery feels like it's not an option anymore. The damage will be so significant to us that there's no better word to describe what's happening than a death. Those storms happen in our lives. It may be a tragic diagnosis for you or a loved one. It may be a loss that you've suffered. It may be a relationship that you had that has died. It could be a dashed hope or a disappointment at home or at work. A storm can be a relationship that you are still in. You may feel that your marriage might be characterized as a storm at times. Or your relationship with your parents or your kids. You might describe your home as a storm. We face storms of all kinds. Internal storms, kind of external storms, situational storms. And just like on the sea, these storms can pop up very quickly. The waters are calm until the phone rings and everything changes. Those storms happen in our lives all the time. You feel these storms are real, and if you've been through one, you know how truly dangerous they feel. You row against them, but you make no progress. We've all faced storms like that. But remember, these disciples expected the storm on the Sea of Galilee. I think we struggle to expect life's storms. Most of us are shocked when storms hit our lives. We don't see them coming. You know, the siren song of our culture is about personal satisfaction. Like, everything is going to be right for you. And we hear that song so much that we internalize and it becomes the lens through which we see everything. So when a storm hits, we cry out to that storm, unfair, unexpected. We ought rather to take our cue from the disciples in the boat. They didn't shout out at the storm, unfair, unexpected. They knew that life would include storms and tragedies. That was a part of living life on the sea. So too, it's a part of living life in this world. It's not about if storms arising, it's about when storms are going to arise. You hear it all the time, you know, like when you hear people interviewed on TV, they go through something terrible, they say, I never thought it would happen to me. Now look, I'm not suggesting that we walk around every day like waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, like that's no great quality of life to live, but I am suggesting that we would be better suited with a worldview that included space and expectation for life's storms. We should be ready for them when they come. So the disciples found themselves in a boat, in a storm, at night, and it was threatening to undo them. So the second point is about the power. Because into that tragic situation, into that perilous event, walks Jesus Christ. The text says that in the midst of that storm, in the middle of the sea, they looked out and they saw Jesus walking across the water, coming towards them. As they hold on for dear life, as they row against the waves, beating on the boat, as they squint through the sheets of rain, they catch a glimpse of Jesus on the water. Think about how shocked they must have been when they saw Jesus. They had no paradigm for people walking on water. They had no category for that. This was no street magician doing a trick. This was Jesus walking across the open waters of the sea. Now the text tells us that Jesus walked across the water. And that word in its original language means simply that. He walked. It's like Jesus was strolling across the surface of the water in a storm. It doesn't say that Jesus, like, slogged through the storm, like he's not sloshing through the water waist deep, like wiping sweat and rain from his brow, like fighting against the waves and trudging up the peaks of the waves and down the other side. It says that he just walked across the surface. He just walked. The storm raged and Jesus walked over it. The text waits until this moment to tell us that the disciples were frightened. Now, no doubt that they were like scared before during the storm, but they were probably really focused. And the text says it wasn't until that moment that they saw Jesus walking on the water that they became terrified. They were scared. They couldn't believe what Jesus demonstrated here. Because Jesus demonstrated crazy power in this story. He's showing us that he's more powerful, yes, than jugs of wine, water to be turned into wine, stronger than crippled legs to be made well. Jesus is stronger even than seas and storms. That is a whole new level of power. There's another story in the Bible where Jesus is in a boat with the disciples in the water in a storm. And in that story, though, Jesus is sleeping in the boat, and the disciples wake him and alert him of how perilous, again, how much danger they are in. And Jesus wakes up, and he stills the storm with a single word. He doesn't get up to the stern of the boat and say, like, by the power of my own name, like, see, he just says, enough. And the storm is still. He demonstrates in that story, too, his power over storms. He speaks and storms obey. Here, though, he doesn't calm the storm, but he walks over it, demonstrating his power over the wind and the waves. These wind and waves are at his whim. They listen to his power. Jesus Christ was so powerful that he simply walked over the surface. But walking over the water isn't the only way that Jesus demonstrated his power in this passage. There's another way that he showed them how big and powerful he is, and it was through the words that he used, the words that he spoke to them as he stood there on the water. It says they see Jesus on the water and they're terrified, and Jesus calls out to them. And our passage says something like, "It is I, do not be afraid." I think that's what the passage says. He calls out to them. But the translators here in our translation have made a choice to be like conversationally true to the text. You know, they're making a choice here, but the actual phrase that Jesus calls out to them from the water is, "I am." Now, they don't translate it that way because it doesn't make a lot of sense for us. Like, the English doesn't work out right, you know, for Jesus to stand out there and say, "I am," but that's what the text actually says, and that wording is really important because that phrase, "I am," is the very name of God. It's the identifier that God has given humanity. When Moses met God for the first time, he asked God, "God, what shall we call you? What name? Do you have a name? What do we call you?" And God said, "I am. That's my name. That's what you call me. I am." Not "I was," you know, like "I was something," you know, "but now I'm something different." No. "I am. I've always been." The same God, eternally in the past. And not "I will be," as if to say, like, God is going to become something else. No, he says, I will always be. Not I was, not I will be, but I am. God is saying, I simply exist. I exist without help. That name, I am, is huge. It's God's name. And so that day on the water, Jesus, standing on the surface of the water, calls out to his disciples, "I am," saying, "I am God." Now, you have to understand that this was just as scandalous to the disciples as seeing a human being walk on the surface of the water. It was just as hard for them to believe. Jesus is showing them in those words that he's not simply strong enough to save them. He's not only there to be their hero coming to their rescue in the boat that day. He is God himself. He is the I Am, the one who has existed for all eternity past and will for all eternity future. He is the Creator, the one who loves us, the one who judges us. Jesus Christ is making a statement. I am. I am God Himself. I'm not just a powerful sea walker. I am God. Again, the implication for us is clear. The storms that threaten to undo us, the things that threaten our safety, our health, our well-being, our identity, our spiritual, physical, emotional health, those things, those storms submit themselves to Jesus Christ as God. Jesus wants you to see that this morning in this story. He's more powerful than the storm that you are facing or the storm that you will no doubt face in your life. He effortlessly walks across the surface of it. He's not battered by it. He walks across it and he's coming to you. He sees you struggling against the waves, rowing as hard as you can, but making very little progress. And he's coming to you. He's bigger and more powerful than the storm that you face, and he's on his way to you. That thing in your life that is just too powerful for you, the thing against which you feel powerless, that thing is powerless to Jesus Christ. It's nothing compared to his power. He transcends it. He not only walks across the water, he walks across our storms. He is God himself, and he's coming to us. Lastly, I want to talk about the boat. So Jesus comes to them walking on the water and he calls out to them, I am. He demonstrates that he's more powerful than the storm. But unlike that other story about the disciples in the boat, here the text doesn't tell us that Jesus calmed the storm. He doesn't do that here. The boat is still tossed about, but something does change. Actually, I want to say that three things change. First, he tells them not to be afraid. Don't be afraid. Actually, what he says when our translation says, you know, it is I, do not be afraid. In the original language, it's four words. I am, no fear. I am, no fear. Jesus calls out to us in the boat, across the waters, no fear. Do not be afraid. You, in the boat, in the storm, whatever that storm is that you're facing, do not be afraid. I, Jesus, am coming to you. I see you, and I'm more powerful than the thing that you face. Don't be afraid. I was thinking just this morning about a friend of mine who, he was a member at the other congregation at Overland Park. A man who was 73 named Bob, who I went to see in the hospital because he was in perfect health, and then all of a sudden, a storm, you know? He had a kind of an odd accident at home that landed him in the hospital, and then the dominoes just started falling. And I met with him just a week and a half, maybe, before he eventually died. And Bob was just so not afraid. It was a reminder that that really is a possibility for us, that we can face life's biggest storms. Bob sat in a hospital bed facing his own death, and he just was not afraid. And not just kind of like chipper or like, he was spiritually confident and resting in the fact that that his God was bigger than the storms that he was going through. I guess I say all that to say, like, I admire that kind of attitude. When I see somebody going through a terrible, tragic storm of their own, it's something that I look up to and admire and hope that I will have the strength to do when I face life storms. But it reminds me, too, that that's an actual possibility for God's people, to go through those terrible storms and to hold tightly to Jesus and to say, no fear. No fear, because we know that God is Jesus Christ with us. So that's the first thing. He calls out to us, no fear. The second thing that happens is that Jesus gets into the boat. Even though the storm still rages, Jesus gets in the boat. But specifically, if you look closely, our text tells us that the disciples took him into the boat. I think that's an important emphasis. You know, it's not as if Jesus came to them and stepped out. They were leaning out over the side of the boat, and they seized Jesus. They reached out, they strained for him across the water, and they grabbed him, and they pulled him into the boat before he could even get to them. Now, that's an important thing for us to remember when we go through life storms too, that we ought to lean out to Jesus and to take hold of him. It's a great example of faith. Faith is not passive, it's active, reaching out and taking hold of Jesus. It's not just believing that Jesus is capable of walking on the water. It's not just believing that he's bigger than the storm. It's pulling him into our boat and trusting him at the helm. It's putting our trust in him. Jesus, I pull you in. I trust you. I take you into the boat of my life. Although God is so big and so powerful, he gets into the boat with us. He's so personal and near to us. He's with us in our storms. Lastly, the last thing that happens is the text tells us that when Jesus did get into the boat, that like another supernatural thing happened. Did you pick up on that in the reading of the text? Like Jesus walking on the water isn't the only supernatural thing that happens. It says that when Jesus got into the boat, they were like immediately, they arrived at the harbor on the other side, at their destination. Jesus whisked them to safety. Their rowing is no longer required. Jesus has taken control, and he will bring them to safety. So what does that mean for our storms that we face in our lives? Well, it means that Jesus won't calm every storm that we face. That's what I think is demonstrated in this story. He won't quiet every storm, but he will be with you. He will quell your fears. He will get into the boat with you, and he will take you to your destination. He will bring you to ultimate safety. You know, Jesus Christ, while he does let us experience the pain and the brokenness of this world, he has made a way for us to experience ultimate safety, eternal safety. Jesus experienced the ultimate storm, the storm of God's justice for sin. He took that storm on himself so that the biggest storm that you and I can ever face, not storms that threaten our bodies, but storms that threaten our hearts and souls, the storms of sin and death, we won't ever have to face those storms. They can never touch us. We will be safe in the harbor because of the work that Jesus has done for us. This morning, we're gonna end the sermon time a little differently. I'm gonna invite Lindsay and the band to come up, and we're gonna sing a song together called "Jesus Savior, Pilot Me." That song is a prayer. It's an expression of that faith that I was talking about. It's a request for Jesus to get into the boat with you. Those of you that are facing a storm this morning, this song is a prayer for you to God, to say, God, will you pilot this boat? I trust you, God. Will you get into this boat with me, and will you bring me safely to my destination? I'm going to have the prayer teams, too, take their places on the side of the room. I just encourage you, any of you that are going through a storm this morning, or if you want to help, have someone help you pray that prayer, Jesus, Savior, pilot me. I encourage you to visit one of those teams. Sing this song with your voice, but also pray it in your heart this morning. All right?